Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My dad has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you already built your life, but now you need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today, the title of the text I'm calling More Than You Think. More Than You Think. And I've read the scriptures hundreds of times, and the particular foundation of this text no less than dozens of times. But something popped out to me about 2 or 3 weeks ago that really shook me up in a good way that I want to share with you here today. Edmund Burke shared, he said, "Nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could do only a little." I'll say it again. "Nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could only do a little." How many times haven't you fallen into the rut of thinking that only because you have so much, then it's not going to be enough for the people that you really want to help? When in reality, that little bit goes a long way. We'll get to that momentarily. Turn over to Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2 in the New American Standard Version of the Bible shares a story that we normally share at the end of each calendar year, the Christmas story. But there's a piece of this that, like I said moments ago, really rocked me quite a bit, that opened up a window that I maybe have forgotten about or hadn't seen before. So in Matthew chapter 2, starting in the first verse, it says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea in the days of Herod the king, the Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him." Now figure out why. Because Herod was the king. So if somebody else came to worship the baby king, you would be, if you were Herod, probably a little upset too, right? So in verse 4, "Gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born." Now I'm in Matthew chapter 2, verse 5. "They said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what has been written.'" He says in verse 6, "O you Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of that area, for out of you shall come forth a ruler who will be shepherd my people Israel." Verse 7, listen to this. "Then Herod secretly called the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared." Verse 8, "And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, 'Go and search carefully for the child. And when you have found him, report to me, so that I may go come and worship him too.' After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star, which they had seen in the east, went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And after coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense," I'll come back to that, "and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way." That is the foundation of my text. I'll come back to that in just a few. There's a true story. From time to time, the story says, we write to pass on something that we've seen while participating in something called Operation Teddy Bear. After 15 years, I thought we'd heard it all. I was wrong. Everything was going as expected. The children's eyes were closed, and the Operation Teddy Bear backpacks were placed on the desks before them. One, two, three, open your eyes. This is for you. Jim Grubbs from the volunteer place and the principal said, as always, the first grade classroom erupted into screams of joy and shouts of, look what I got. One little girl caught Jim and the principal's attention. She seemed lost and had not opened her backpack. They watched as she fiddled with one of the zippers and stiffly looked around the room. Her actions were repetitive, and her wide eyes looked confused, almost fearful. Jim walked over and told her that the backpack was for her, so to open her bag. She did not seem to notice his presence. Her eyes kept searching the room. Suddenly, he felt something he'd never felt before, her hopelessness. Jim returned to where the principal was standing to ask her to explain the child's reaction. She said, quote, even a six-year-old has to learn that someone cares. This was one of the most horrible things Jim and I had ever heard. They sent out a request, and hundreds of people responded with an outpouring of likes of which they had never seen before. We thought we would like to know if we succeeded in making some sort of change in her life. Yesterday, December 6th, John Morris and Nick of McKenna Place in Long Beach held their St. Nick gift party. It was a smash, and the generosity of the clientele was just over the top. This morning, John and Nick arrived at the underprivileged elementary school and with a truckload full of toys. They were joined by all these different people, and they carried the toys into the school. And next, we sorted the toys by gender and finished. They loaded up some toys on the cart, and they had one particular room in mind, this little girl's classroom that had problems opening up her gifts before. After entering the room, the principal introduced them. So Mike McBride reminded the students about Operation Teddy Bear and volunteering, and he finished by asking if they were interested in a surprise. So in this little girl's classroom, it was pure joy. Again, the title of the text today is More Than You Think. Okay then, heads down, eyes closed, and no peeking, Mike said. Each toy was quickly placed on the student's desk, and a very special doll was placed on our little girl's desk. Nick counted down. One, two, three. Wow, the room came alive with shouts of joy. Click here to see the video that the story says. One little girl stared at the doll for a moment and then looked around the room. She gently placed her hands on the box, and then it happened. She smiled. She realized people care. The story ends with thank you to John and Nick and everyone who made this moment of joy and hope possible. Wonderful, simply wonderful. The title of the text again today is More Than You Think. We're talking about gifts. I'll come back to the book of Matthew in a minute. I'm repeating, but Edmund Burke said, nobody made a greater mistake than he would who did nothing because he could only do a little bit. Tracy Chapman said, I've seen and met angels wearing the disguise of ordinary people living ordinary lives. Have you ever been a recipient of an angel's gift? Maybe the angel didn't look like you would think. Maybe that angel didn't have wings, but they were no less an angel. Have you ever decided to become an angel in people's lives, even though you don't have wings most days? Maya Angelou wrote, I've learned that you shouldn't go through life with a catcher's mitt on both hands. You need to be able to throw something back. Powerful statement, isn't it? William James said, the great use of life is to spend it for something that outlasts it. That's been one of my goals and mantras, if you will, in life, that long after I'm gone, I'm hoping to make some ripples in people's lives long after I'm gone. Back to Matthew chapter 2. Let's start in verse 11. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way. Now, scholars, people way more smart than I, have debated why these three gifts were really left for Jesus and his family. Now, I'm not going to go into all the reasons because that would probably bore us all to sleep. But I will suggest maybe a few ideas that have only come to light for me in my family in the last few months. Now, in that culture, the oldest male in the house, in the family, I should say, was extremely powerful. So when a baby was born, again, in that culture, if the oldest male did not want that child would be left to die. In fact, when the child was born in that part of the world at that time, the child would be laid on the ground, a newborn baby laid on the ground. And if the oldest male did not pick that child up, that was a sign that that child was to be left outdoors and or in the wild to die. So you see, in that environment, in that culture, not every child made it. In fact, some scholars say that about a quarter of the babies that were born in that culture at that time died before they reached a year old. And half the kids who were born at that time did not live to reach age 10. You're going to see why I'm talking about this in just a minute or two. Oftentimes, people symbolize a lot of stuff in the Bible when it might not need to be symbolized. I mean, sometimes you can just read it for what it is instead of trying to make something out of that's not even there. Have you all fallen into that before? You know what I'm saying? So here's a summary of what others have said, maybe some others have said, about those wise men's gifts. Let me start with gold. Gold was usually offered to kings by their subjects, and they honored Jesus in one of the best ways that they could. Maybe, again, this is just my opinion here, not only were they offering it to this king, but maybe they were gold would then finance the family for a period of time. So it was a very practical gift. Again, oftentimes we try to overcomplicate the Bible. And oftentimes we try to often fall into devaluing what our gifts can do for other people when we really don't have to devalue them at all. We just have to express them in love. Now, frankincense is something that I want to invest a little time on here because we have only become familiar with frankincense in the last few months. Now, frankincense represents God's holiness, hence being a gift. But also, in the culture where the Magi came from, frankincense was medicine. Now, think about this a minute. Scholars say that frankincense was a holy oil, so to speak, and certainly in the Old Testament we read that that was used as sacrifices to God, and we could go through Leviticus and share all that stuff. But think about this a minute. Frankincense also stimulates the blood in people's bodies. It helps the bone marrow work better. Let me just get a little bit more personal here. In the last several months, and through the homework of my amazing wife, she has started using frankincense oil on Juliana, and for the purpose of stimulating bone marrow. And there's been times in the last few months when her blood counts have been so high, the doctors just don't understand how and why her counts can be so high. Now, I'll be very candid and embarrassed when I tell you this. But when I first came across this concept a few weeks back, you know how emotional I am, but I just lost it. I just started sobbing and sobbing because at the time I first understood this, I realized that, hear me very clearly, that the Magi, potentially, I wasn't there, I'm not in their heads, could have given frankincense to the family to make sure that the new king lives and is healthy, right? But in the Jewish culture, frankincense was used for what? Sacrificing to God in holiness. So what I'm trying to say here is sometimes the gifts that we receive are given in one way and leveraged in a different way. So when you and I devalue the gifts that we're encouraged or we have a hunch to share with other folks, we think it's this, but to them it might be this. Or the gifts may be used in a multitude of ways that maybe you didn't even think about at the time. So it's really important for me and for you also to follow through on those desires, on those acts of love and those acts of kindness, to be a blessing to other people, because you don't know what that blessing can be magnified to as a result of your love for other people. Amen. Now again, verse, I'll be repeating this a few times, but back in Matthew 2, they fell down and worshiped him, right? Then opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now over in the Old Testament, over in the Old Testament, Leviticus 2, it talks about how they would offer the meat offering and pour frankincense on it. But going back to what happened in the book of Matthew, that they opened their gifts. They didn't just present the gifts and walk away. Words mean something to me, because with me, it's a very complicated story in my little brain, but I'm very much aware of words. Not only how I speak it, if I speak it, but the words that people use. Because sometimes the words that folks use do it intentionally. Let me give you an example. I was in a meeting some weeks ago, and this person said something that the majority of the room missed. It was a body slam to another individual. And it was a body slam, but few people got it. I got it. And then maybe a month or two after, I said, "Were you body slamming so-and-so?" "Oh, yeah." Nobody caught it, or very few people caught it. So oftentimes you got to read between the lines in order to get the whole picture. So as I read Matthew, they follow the star, they bring the gifts, but they opened the gifts. They don't just leave the gifts, they opened the gifts. They did something. They were proactive with the gifts. Maybe I'm reading a little too much in there, I'm not sure. But I think it's important for us to be willing not only to present our gifts, but to open our gifts to other people. That you may think, or maybe you might not think, that your gifts are all that. That you think that this is less than what these folks need. When in fact, that what you're presenting to these people may save their life. So I'm thinking maybe, kind of, sort of, that the Magi brought medicine, in this example, at least in their mind, to keep Jesus alive, this new king, because they knew maybe at the time that a good percentage of the babies in that culture, or the young children at that time, didn't live long. So they were there in their love, in their way, in their cultural way, from Iran is where they came from, that they were there to make a difference in these kids' lives in a very practical way. So what I'm suggesting to all of us is that we shouldn't devalue how we help people practically. Oftentimes we try to complicate stuff and make something more than really what it is. Sometimes it's just being simple. And I could share other examples about how people have helped us practically that has changed us in a dramatic way. So the wise men must have known the gifts were really important to the Jewish people and their culture. How many times haven't you been approached or talked to in a way that the people were so ignorant of where you came from or who you are that they didn't know that they were in fact insulting you, or stuff they've done to you culturally or relationally, that they didn't know that they were insulting you because they didn't think that far ahead? But some people do it in ignorance. Well, think about this. These Magi, in my view, in my study, did this out of not only love, but they saw what that gift or what those gifts could do for this family. And I think all of us, if we would be more thoughtful in the gifts and the hunches that we have to help people, that maybe that we could be saving a lot of people's lives. Amen. Now there's a story how not a story, but there's a doctor in India who said that frankincense can help with ulcers and other biological ailments that, again, have been going on for thousands and thousands of years. So when you stop and think about the gifts that you think aren't important to other people, Let me tell you firsthand, the gifts that you think are not important to other people are in fact life-saving gifts. Now, one doctor said that most scientists observed, at least some scientists observed, that there's some agent in frankincense that stops cancer from spreading. Another reason why we're using frankincense. Again, we've done our studies, we've done our homework. How many times have you ignored doing your homework to help people because you think that what you have to offer isn't going to be appreciated? Or it's going to be so small that it's going to be a drop in the bucket. That's a wrong way to think. One doctor said that cancer starts when the DNA code within the cell's nucleus becomes corrupted. It seems frankincense has a reset function. What if the Magi, I'm repeating it for about the fourth time to make sure it sinks in, what if the Magi knew that maybe even in their culture that very few babies, at least half the kids, didn't reach age 10? And they knew that they could make a difference in this little king's life, as they saw it, and they were willing to do what they could to make a difference. I'm asking you to use your gifts, leverage your gifts. Don't think little of your gifts. I've given gifts to folks, and I'll be very candid, that I thought were silly. Why would I give a particular gift to these people? But in hindsight, looking back, it was a big deal that they still remember to this day. The little gift isn't always a little gift in other people's hearts and minds. Now, these gifts were given, the gold, frankincense, and myrrh, were given to royalty. Obviously, the Magi viewed Jesus as royalty. Maybe they just wanted to make a difference. Maybe they wanted to say, you know what, I want to have an impact on this new king. But it was interesting, as you know in the story, that they were wise enough, thanks to a dream, to see through Herod, King Herod, that they decided, you know what, this guy's up to no good. We're taking another way home. There are some gifts that are given for one intent, but received with another intent. So the wise men brought frankincense, which was stuff that could help the kids, but again, I'll repeat it, that the Jewish culture used it to offer it to God. Now there's something else that jumps out of the page to me, okay? But back in Matthew 2, that these wise men, it says in verse 11, they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Based on my experience, the wisest of the people I've ever met are humble people. They get that they haven't gotten there by themselves. They are willing to step down and in this case, worship Jesus when the opportunity lends itself. When you and I think we're all that, we're not all that. One author said, true humility is not thinking less of yourself, it is thinking of yourself less. Again, true humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. A guy named Chris Jammy shared, he says, to share your weaknesses is to make yourself vulnerable. Listen to this. To share your weaknesses is to make yourself vulnerable. To make yourself vulnerable is to show your strength. You know how hard it is and how unsafe it is many times to share your heart? Because not everybody has your best interest at heart. So it takes a tremendous amount of trust, faith, courage, whatever other adjective you want to use, to share your heart. These Magi that came to worship Jesus, they were well known, obviously, in their culture. But they realized that, you know what, this Jesus, this baby king, was somebody powerful. And they bowed down to worship Jesus. Over in 1 Peter, it says, each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others. I'm in 1 Peter 4. Faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. Romans said, since we have gifts that differ, listen, according to the grace given to us, each of us is to exercise them accordingly. We all have different gifts. I, for a long time, I mean many years, I wanted to have the gifts and talents of other people. I wanted to be more logical, like my wife. I wanted to be calm, cool, and collected like my wife. I wanted to have the intelligence of accounting type people. You know, I'm not it. I strive to be, but I can bang my head into a wall all day, but I'm not going to be them. It took me a long time to realize that, why am I wasting all the years trying to be somebody that I'm not? Why don't I develop my own skin? Why don't I develop who I really am and leverage that for the benefit of other people? 1 Peter again says, in a paraphrased form, in chapter 4, 1 Peter 4, it says, everything in the world is about to be wrapped up, so take nothing for granted. Stay wide awake in prayer. Most of all, love each other as if your life depended on it. Love makes up for practically anything. Be quick to give a meal to the hungry, a bed to the homeless, cheerfully, he says. Be generous with the different things God gave you, passing them around so all can get in on it. If words, let it be God's words. If it helps, let it be God's hearty help. That way, God's bright presence will be evident in everything through Jesus, and he'll get all the credit as the one mighty in everything, on course to the end of time. So have you ever met children, I know you have, who when they get a gift, they hoard it, they want to keep it, they don't want to share it, they don't want to magnify it? Have you ever met people that are so tight with what they have that they are unwilling to share? Well, if we're unwilling to share, how can we be blessed to have more if our hands are closed? I had to learn it the hard way many, many times. Rick Warren shares, God uses my talents. Listen, he, very wise man. He says, God uses my talents to test my unselfishness. Let me just let that sink in a minute. God uses my talents to test my unselfishness. You have to decide in life, he says, for whom or what you're going to live. You're either going to live in a self-centered, miserly life, or you're going to live for something greater than yourself. Faithful people, he says, faithful people don't live for themselves. They realize that the talents God gave them are not for their own benefit. They're to make the world a better place. Think about that in your life and my life. Some of us are pretty young. Some of us are reaching the middle age and the older slide of life. But can't we still learn that what we've been given is there to bless other people, to share with other people? There are times, listen, I'll say it multiple times, but there are times when the value of the gift, there are times when the value of the gift is more important to the receiver than the giver realized. I'm so tempted to share more personal examples, but I can tell you firsthand, let me share it again. There are times when the value of the gift is more important to the receiver than the giver realized. I'm running from the temptation to get personal. So there's a few lessons here in that concept. Let me share four of them. There may be people who are on the way to give you gifts that you can't imagine. Let me say it again. There might be people who are on their way to give you gifts that you can't imagine. So there's a flip side of that same coin, isn't it? Are you on the way to give gifts to people that they can't imagine? Because maybe you think that you can make a difference, or maybe you're not going because what you want to give or you want to share, you don't think is very valuable. I tell you, I've been given gifts in the form of a sentence before that has carried me for months, that has kept me breathing emotionally for months. So some people would say, well, that's not very important. You can't take that to the bank. Oh, yes, you can. Because if that keeps somebody going, then that's valuable stuff. Amen. It's not a small thing. You know, we've gotten gas cards in the mail. Some people look, well, what's a gas card? Well, that's about a $30 savings right there that you didn't have to take out of your pocket to put in your gas tank. It's a big deal. It's not a small deal. Number two, Look beyond the historical use of a gift. Look beyond the historical use of the gift. I go back to frankincense. Iran was used for one thing. In Israel, it was used for something else. Could the two interchange? I think so. Number three. Look deeper into the intent of the gift giver. Look deeper into the intent of the one giving the gift. And number four, could there be multiple uses for the gifts you've received? Could there be? I would suggest to you, yes, there are multiple uses for the gifts that you've been given to leverage for the sake of other people. So your gifts matter, don't they? The gifts that we have to share matter, and the gifts that we've been given matter. Ken Wert, W-E-R-T, shares, I had an old trench coat that was balled up on the floor in my garage. Gathering dust near the washing machine, it was raining and it was unusually cold for California anyway. I was driving home when I saw a man in a short sleeve shirt wandering through our neighborhood pushing a shopping cart. He was walking painfully slow and he was dripping wet. I paused at the intersection to my street and watched him for a long time, thinking my heart was heavy seeing him move so slowly, so wet, so cold. I suddenly remembered the crumpled up coat, but what if I needed it sometime in the future? A story I had once heard at a church conference came to mind. Two boys walked down a road that led through a field. The younger of the two noticed a man toiling in the fields of his farm and his good clothes stacked neatly off to the side. The boy looked at his older friend and said, "Let's hide his shoes so when he comes from the field, he won't be able to find them. His expression will be priceless," the boy laughed. The older of the two boys thought for a moment and said, "The man looks poor. See his clothes? Let's do this instead. Let's hide a silver dollar in each shoe, and then we'll hide in these bushes and see how he reacts instead." The younger companion agreed to the plan, and they placed a silver dollar in each shoe and hid behind the bushes. It wasn't long before the farmer came in from the field, and he was tired and worn. He reached down and pulled on his shoe and immediately feeling money under his foot. With the coin now between his fingers, he looked around to see who could have put it in his shoe, but no one was there. He just stared in disbelief. He was confused. He slid his other foot into the shoe and felt the second coin. This time, the man was overwhelmed when he removed the second silver dollar from his shoe. Thinking he was alone, he dropped to his knees and offered a verbal prayer that the boys could easily hear from their hiding place. They heard the farmer cry tears of relief and gratitude. He spoke of his sick wife and his boys in need of food. He expressed gratitude for his unexpected bounty from unknown hands. After a time, the boys came out from their hiding place and slowly started their long walk home. They felt good inside. They felt warm, changed somehow, knowing the good that they had done to a poor farmer in dire straits. A smile crept across their souls. So the story goes back to that first man. He says, "I drove home, took my coat from the garage, and went looking for the old man in the rain. I spotted him. He hadn't gone far. The rain had let up some. I pulled up alongside him and asked him to come over. He hesitated for a moment and then walked closer. I asked if he had a place to stay. He said he did, and it was close. I offered him my jacket. He looked stunned, like I was violating some acceptable code of conduct. I urged him to take it. He slowly reached out and took my old coat, and then he smiled. So did I. He says, "We all have poor farmers toiling in the fields of their trials and difficulties along the roads of our lives. Their challenges might not be like our challenges, but their countenance often tell a story of pain. We have opportunities," he says, "to hide shoes or hide silver dollars in them. This day, this time, I removed a silver dollar from the floor of my garage and slipped it into an old man's shoe. A life was blessed for having done it. And I think the old man's life may have been blessed by it as well. So he says, when I hear stories of kindness being done to others, I'm inspired to do the same. I think most of us are like that. We need each other's inspiration as we travel along life's highways. Again, the story, the title is more than you think. The big picture of the story is the gifts and the talents that you think aren't all that could be life-changing / life-saving to the people that you may have postponed making a difference in their lives. There was once a man who netted 3 trout from a mountain stream and carefully placed them side by side on a thick patch of grass. Before he took them out of the water, there was a liquid ballet of motion, fluid and graceful and vibrant and alive. After he netted them, it was another story. As the trout lay on the grass, they were motionless. Their eyes were fixed. They gasped for air, and they looked and acted stupid, the storyteller says. The man noticed they seemed unhappy. So he talked to them, hoping that his encouragement would change them. "Little fish, don't be sad. You'll like the grass. Just try it out for a while." No movement, no response, no change. A few more seconds passed. The man's neighbor walked by and said, "Hey, Bob, come and check out these fish." Bob sauntered over, and the man explained that he was certain that the fish could just adjust. "I'm sure they could prosper here on the grass. Don't you agree?" "Why not?" Bob replied. So he also tried to tell the fish it would be good if they learned to like the grass. After all, he liked the grass. Why shouldn't they? Still, the fish didn't blink. They just lay there looking dumber by the second. Finally, a little boy approached, and he exclaimed, "What are you doing? Put them back. They can't be all they've been created to be when they're out of the water." Finally convinced, the man carefully placed each fish back in the stream. After splashing for a split second, all 3 swam away effortlessly. Again, it was like a liquid ballet. What ease, what grace, what beauty. In that moment, listen, I'm ending here. In that moment, the man realized that no matter how long the fish lay there, they would never adjust to the grass and would never be satisfied, no matter how much he or anyone else told them otherwise. So even if the fish tried to convince themselves they could learn to like the grass, they never would. And they would never prosper. In fact, they would eventually die. So I end with, there are people all around you who need you to help them thrive. Let me repeat that 2 more times. There are people all around you who need you to help them thrive. Again, there are people all around you that need you to help them thrive. So every day, there's ways to serve other people. The gifts you have can be more valuable to those in ways that you may never understand. Your gifts are more powerful than you think, so don't be ashamed of them. Don't be afraid to share your gifts with humility, as the Magi did when they came to Jesus. And they not only presented their gifts, but they opened their gifts, and those gifts changed that family's life. So shouldn't we do the same thing? Amen. I'm so fired up about my 4th book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge and experience and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life.
I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.